Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Commander Clash podcast, where the Commander Clash crew talks all things Commander. And we got a good one this week. We are talking about the best utility mana rocks. And since we're talking mana rocks, we had to bring back Richard for this one. Richard, it's good to have you back on the cast. It's been a couple of months. How are things?
Hello. I am the champion of mana rocks, Richard, the Codfather.
Mana rock.
Once we saw the Soulstone, I'm like, I gotta be on this podcast. So here I am.
We're gonna hold that, because I think the big question on my mind and everyone's mind is, will Richard actually play the Soulstone, the new hype mana rock from Spider-Man? But we're gonna get to that in a minute. We got the rest of the crew to introduce, including Tomer, Budget Commander. How are you today, Tomer?
I'm doing well. There's a lot of utility mana rocks that I run in specific decks, and I think this latest one is a banger. I don't know about you guys, but we'll get into that soon.
I feel like Wizards has realized that mana rocks, especially 3-mana mana rocks, are a good place to put interesting abilities and like kind of power creep a little bit compared to like before, which has led to some really cool cards, but I'm getting ahead of myself.
We also have twos.
The Asian Avenger, Krim. Good morning, Krim. How's it going today?
Good morning. I'm obviously in high spirits because
you like mana rocks.
mana rocks. I love mana rocks. And, you know, Infinity Stone.
So as I said, our topic today, best utility mana rocks and digging into the Soul Stone. But before we get into that, we got a couple of sponsors. Our show today is brought to you by Foil Armor. Do you have problems with your foils curling? Well, Foil Armor is the ultimate solution to flattening your foils. It's a two-way humidity pack that you simply put inside an airtight container with your cards, and Foil Armor will absorb and release moisture, making your cards completely flat. Put it back in your storage box to keep your cards flat forever, and you can head over to foilarmor.com and use the code MTGGoldfish to get 15% off. And our show is also brought to you by Card Conduit, the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. If you ever get tired of the hassles of buy listing, you can skip them with Card Conduit. You can use their curated service where you send in as many cards as you want with a buy list value of a dollar or more and pay just a 5% service fee. And if you want to do a bit of work, you can use their sorted service where you list and sort your cards in advance and pay just a 2% fee. Either way, you're going to get a detailed report with the results in a fast payment once your order is processed. And you can even get another 10% off by heading over to CardConduit.com/MTGGoldfish. Card Conduit, it's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. So thank you to our sponsors for supporting the show. And now it's time for the comment of the week. So last week, we talked about cards that we would like to have be commanders. And our top comment comes from Neatest Burrito, who says, sounds like it's time for another non-legendary commanders episode of Commander Clash. Which it actually might be. We had some good choices. There were some cards that we talked about that were like, would have been pretty fun as a commander. Although, we might just have to wait a little bit because I'm pretty sure we're going to get all those abilities on commanders in a few years anyway.
I think based on our discussion, I think it's going to be Crabmander Clash.
Crabmander.
Yeah.
We're all stations that week. That would be really good. That's a good title. Write it down.
On that note, let's talk about the best utility mana rocks. And what really got us thinking about this topic was a brand new mana rock that just got spoiled last week or something like that from the Spider-Man set. Our first ever Infinity Stone in Magic, the Soul Stone. So the Soul Stone, it's 2 mana. It's a black card. So 1 and a black. It's an indestructible legendary Infinity Stone. It taps to make a black mana, or you can pay 7 mana, including 1 black, tap it, exile a creature you control, and you harness the Soul Stone. And once you harness the Soul Stone, at the beginning of your upkeep, you reanimate a creature from your graveyard. Return target creature from your graveyard to the battlefield. So this card, obviously, kind of shocking. Like, it's only 2 mana, which is already kind of insane, and it has so much upside. But I'm curious, what's your guys' just initial gut reaction to the Soul Stone? Because there's been a lot of conversation about the card. And let's start with Richard. Richard, is this a mana rock you're actually going to play?
Oh my god,
$1 million question.
Okay. So we were all on the Discord together when this happened, and I'm like, oh my god, this card is insane. It's a 2 mana, indestructible mana rock with upside, right? I'm like, put me into the podcast, Richard. The mana rock haters got to spread the word that this is the mana rock everyone should be playing. And then I prepared for this podcast and realized I jabated all of us. Okay. This is actually unplayable trash.
What?
Here's why.
Well, the dice of farewell, right?
Okay, no. Okay, I understand it dies of farewell, but I looked beyond that because farewell is one specific card, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let me preface this. If you are an Arcane Signet believer, then yeah, you play the Soul Stone, okay? But if you are like me and you're like, nah, Arcane Signet isn't going to cut it, this isn't going to cut it either because it's indestructible, right? The only thing that kills it is farewell, right? Wrong, right? I play Skyclave Relic and Darksteel Ingot, which are indestructible artifacts.
Yeah.
They're mana rocks. I play them, okay? I've actually played them several times. And there's one key difference. The Soul Stone is a colored artifact, which means it dies to all his dust and Ugin the Spirit Dragon. Two universal sweepers that you put in non-white decks, right? So it dies to those two. So if you run this rock, you cannot play those two sweepers. You cannot play the catch-all sweepers in black. And it's not like a theoretical, right? Like these cards actually go into your deck, right? It's not like your opponent is playing them, you get screwed, right? You would actually play them in your deck. And then it dies to Faerevon Psychrift as well. Those are the two other popular things. And then like some random things like Wave of Vitriol. Maybe like
side of Psychrift,
guys.
You get
bounced.
I gotta.
I mean, you get bounced. So you cannot play Ugin or All Is Dust. That's a huge deal, right?
What if
on
you're
top
not
of that,
Lugia?
I'll give you some other cons of this mana rock. Right, it doesn't fix color. Right, so 4-5 color decks. You might not be happy with this, right? Because like 2-3 color decks probably fine, especially if you're playing like Fetch Shock mana base. That's no problem. So that's a problem. The other problem, which may not be a problem with this, but maybe a problem on like the green one or something, is if that ability looks too scary, you're going to die first. So the ability on this one is reanimate something every turn, which isn't too scary if you're just like a normal deck. But if you're a reanimator deck, you're going to die super fast when you throw out the Soul Stone, right? They know you got big fatties to reanimate. Once you get to 7 mana, you're going to activate this, so they're going to kill you. So that static sitting there, it's kind of scary for the table. And then the last thing for the black one in particular is it doesn't help your coffers. So when you play your bad land ramp, like Solemn, you know, Scampering Surveyor, even Aklazots, they power up your coffers. Even if they're non-swamps, like you'll have an Urborg, so it powers that up. So that's a little minor thing for the black one in particular. But Ugin and All Is Dust. That's a huge deal, right? So if you play those cards, you cannot play this Mana Rock, right?
Let me ask you, just this question has been on my mind since you started talking. If you use this to ramp into Ugin or All Is Dust, are you not kind of cool with the fact that, like, you got an Ugin now, even if you go down your 2-mana Mana Rock? Like, are you not coming out ahead
in
that exchange?
This, play Dark Ritual. Play Dark Ritual. Like if your goal of your rock is to add 2 mana and die, play Dark Ritual, right? You'll get even more explosive starts, right? And no one will see it coming. But I don't want to invest a card to ramp into my sweeper and then sweep away my 2 mana play and my extra mana advantage. Like, no, that's not what I'm doing, right? So I would play this,
Richard,
in hopes that no one at the table is playing any of those cards. Right? So if you are not an All Is Dust believer, right, and you think your meta, no one is running Farewell, no one is running All Is Dust, then yeah, you can play this, right? But I plan on playing, I think those two colorless sweepers are very important, and they go in all decks, right? So the white one is going to have a problem with this, the green one's going to have a problem with this, et cetera, et cetera. So because of those two cards, if this was a colorless Infinity Stone, we'd be cooking. But the colored aspect of it actually kind of screws it up, right?
I don't know. I don't know if I buy it personally. I don't know if I buy it. Like, yes, it is a non-bow, I guess, if you ramp into an Ugin and you blow up your mana rock. But I feel like that's the kind of non-bow that's just going to be inherent in any commander deck. Like, you have 100 singleton cards.
No!
There's going to be at least two
you
cards in your deck
that
are,
ramp.
Like, kind of awkward.
Non-bow yourself.
Do you play creatures in your deck with Wrath of God, Richard, or Blasphemous Act? Do you not play any creatures because you might blow them up with Blasphemous Act when you got to cast your, like, I don't know if I buy the logic.
That's
I'm
different.
Not sure if I buy
That's
the logic.
That's different, right? Because if you know you're going to Blasphemous Act, you can play your mana rocks or you can, you know, do other things with your mana. But here, the thing you're supposed to be doing, which is generating extra resources in the early game, you got to hold off until the wrath goes off. And then you're like, what the hell, right? Like, what's the point of this, right? Like, so it's like playing around Farewell. You can't, which is why it's poor design, right? You're like, well, it's coming. Let me play a planeswalk. That's the only way to play around Farewell, right? So, like, so I can't play around my own Ugin by not casting the Soulstone. And you know you're going to get scuffed, right? You're not going to even have enough mana. You need the ramp to cast your Ugin or All is Dust. So you have to play into it, and then now your All is Dust is discard a card, right? So it's like,
Tomer, what do you think? Save me, Tomer. Help.
There was so much to deconstruct that. Like, my brain is fried from all that.
It's so obvious.
My brain.
It's
like,
so obvious.
I can't play non-land permanents because I run Farewell, or I can't play Farewell because I run non-land permanents. I don't understand.
No. You have an alternative that does not die, right? The alternative is one mana slower. And it doesn't die. Darksteel Ingot. You can play Darksteel Ingot into All is Dust, into Ugin, and it does not die, right? Like, that's the alternative, right? You can play Solemn. You don't have to be like, oh, Solemn's too slow. Then we play all Arcane Signets and Soulstones. You can play the slower thing that does not die, right?
Is there an amount of upside, Richard, that would make it worth it? Like, or is it just like any black mana rock, no matter how much upside it has, it's not going to be worth it just because of the non-bows? Like, could there be an upside? Obviously, reanimating on your upkeep for 7 mana and sacking a creature, whatever, that's apparently not enough. But is there an amount of upside, or it's just like colored rocks with those cards?
After we talk about the Soulstone, there are some utility rocks that are acceptable, right? Like maybe Cursed Mirror or like Machine God's Effigy or something. You know, like they have to do a lot, right? So that when they die, you get your mana's worth, right? And Cursed Mirror, you can copy a Solemn on the way down, right? To get the same ramp while being a mana rock, right? So... I don't know, Seth, I'm surprised by you. You're a mana rock hater. You don't see the value in surviving in All is Dust? Do you not play All is Dust?
I do.
If you're not a boom pile believer, you have to play Ugin in All is Dust, right?
So I do see the value, but... I mean, can't you just play stuff like Boom Pile and not blow it up because it's a destroy effect and you get round indestructible? Like, is there not a way you could build your deck around, if that is a big concern? Because my take is basically, if it's just a single Ugin that's a non-bow, I think I'm willing to risk it and just trust that most games, I'm not going to draw them both at the same time or it's just going to work out somehow. So, like, I'm not super worried about, like, that amount of non-bow. If you are super worried about it, though, can you not build a good enough Wrath package with, like, Boom Pile effects and so forth? You need those, you think. There's no
Boom Pile
to play the rock.
Half of y'all don't even believe in, right? I believe in Boom Pile, right? Boom Pile, Oblivion Stone, and then Ugin All is Dust. Like, those are the four colorless ones that you would play, you know, like, seriously. Like, not for memes, right? And then your other Universal Wraths, one is Undo Inversion and Owl Revelation. You live through those. Those are safe. Right? But Farewell is a big one that people play.
Yeah.
Right? This goes... But, I mean, how do you play around Farewell, right? Like, you can only play lands. Right? So... and then Psychrift. Psychrift is in casual pods, people play Psychrift all the time. And yeah, you don't lose the card, but you're going to spend your turn redeploying, like, all of these things. Whereas if you had a land, you had a land, right? The land doesn't go anywhere, right? Like... If the Soulstone was an emblem that could have to be removed or destroyed, then yeah, it'd
gotta
be the most
wrapped
thing.
The thing is, it's not good enough.
But that's what a land is.
Not
right?
good
a
enough.
Land is effectively an emblem, right? It cannot be interacted with. You cannot bounce it. And if you do, you get shamed out of your pod, right? For like Armageddoning or whatever, right? So
at the very least, it should have ETB'd, drawn us 3 cards.
Yeah.
And then I think,
yeah.
Then I think it's business. Okay.
That's
Farewell. Wild.
Krim, I know
Krim,
you're
both. Join me. Renounce the Soulstone. dude, I'm watching you do some wild
reasoning. You're talking
reasonings
to the
right
guy
now.
With all the Marvel in the background.
You.
There's no
yeah,
way you can get
all
Krim
that stuff
off
back there.
Off,
right?
You're not going to get Krim off it.
Put me in, coach. 3 Ugin later, Seth is going to be on my side.
But okay, believe it or not, the reason this card is an auto include. Is because you're not building around it. You don't. It is just a mana rock that just sits out there, and if it gets to the late game, it is now a virtue of persistence. I do not need to. If you blow this up, it's no difference than you just blowing up any normal mana rock to me. But if you don't blow this up, it will be a win condition. And that is its strength, is that I don't have to build around it at all. I can, you know what, in this situation, let's say I fire off that all is dust or Ugin and I lose whatever, right? Like, I lost the soul stone. But the one thing, like, as the Council of Reed Richards would show you, the soul stones are one of many. All right, don't worry about it. Just go to another timeline, grab another.
It's even worse if you play all five and you fire off and all this dust and lose all your mana.
Sure. So, but you see, like, the trade off is now that I have played a very powerful spell, right? But if you, that's the thing. I don't have to focus on it. I don't have to do anything with it. I just sit here. It is an untapped mana rock that is very hard to remove, and if it requires you to fire off your best sweeper or your Ugin or something just to pick it off. That's a W for me, right? For a thing that I already got my use out of just by using it to get mana. So I think for me, this is, you're focused on it too much. And that is why it's so strong. It's because you don't have to focus on it at all. Like when it comes to deck building.
So I gotta ask you guys something. Something Richard brought up is maybe this card's kind of scary. Is this a mana rock that's going to get you attacked? Like, does it look scary enough? Because I remember one of the biggest mistakes I ever made evaluating mana rocks was Strixhaven Stadium. When they spoiled that card, I was like, oh, you play it in every deck. It's like a mana rock, and sometimes you kill someone. That's so cool. And then every time I played it, people just brutally murdered me before I got a chance to do anything with it. So I took it out of all my decks. Could this be on that level? Like, are people going to be so scared of the Infinity Stone that you drop it on turn two to ramp and they're just gonna like arch enemy you from turn two?
People
will probably hyper fixate on it, but yeah. At the end of the day, that if that's the best thing on the board, but eventually somebody will just play, I don't know, their commander, and they'll realize that, oh my god, hold on, the Infinity Stone is like 40 turns away.
But there's a Vivi on the battlefield on turn three. They're like, oh crap. I think people will try to keep track of how much mana you have available to see when it turns on. But I don't think it's like, oh, you played a soul stone on turn two, you must die now. I don't think it's that spooky. And then also to answer the original question, I actually wouldn't run the soul stone in that many decks, because I actually think ramp is a little bit overrated in a lot of decks. That's my hot take.
Why is that good, Tomer?
Why is ramp a little overrated? Sometimes you want to
move over Richard. We have a new hot take in town.
Okay.
All right. Eat the comments. What is this? Ramp is overrated.
So I was looking at my deck list, and one deck that I actually would really, really enjoy this card, because again, I don't really run mana rocks that much in most of my decks. If you look at my deck list, there's barely any mana rocks.
Because you play land ramp, right?
No.
You mean no ramp.
No, it's because sometimes I just don't want to ramp. But like, I have an Atrada deck, which is very mana hungry. And I tried to build it. It's like it looks like the Mirror Edric, where whenever your assassins deal damage to an opponent, you cloak instead of drawing a card. You cloak their cards. And what I found out is I played it like Edric, but it kind of was horrible as playing as Edric. I tried to like load up on ways of giving my assassins evasion. I tried to like go into the board way too much. And I found the way that I played it instead that was a lot more successful is I would only play a couple assassins, you know, cloak a couple times, not try to go all in on cloaking, and then flip those cloaked lands. I'd be hitting a lot of lands, and I just flip them up with Atrada's 4-mana ability. And what I found is early ramp was super useful in getting that going. Like a lot of 2-drop mana rocks that I otherwise wouldn't run, like Arcane Signet and stuff, really, really good there. Because then I start cloaking up lanes, and when the mana rocks go bye-bye, I have like this huge, I'm like way ahead on lanes above everybody else. And like that was the way that I ended up playing. And like, yeah, you could farewell me. It doesn't matter. All my permanents are lanes.
So is your argument that ramp is like bad because
you're bad? In this okay. deck, it's actually very ramp heavy. And I want that ramp to be turned on turn two. I want it on as turn two because I want to start flipping as quickly as possible. And that's where I would put it. But like, I looked at most of my black decks and I wouldn't run the Soul Stone in it, which is, I think it's very good.
So join me, Tomer. Soul Stone is trash.
I think it's very good.
I think this card is both underrated and overrated at the same time. I actually think its utility ability is not as good as people think. Like, 7 mana is a lot. You got to wait till your next upkeep. I remember being super hyped about Virtue of Persistence, the black virtue that you can kill something early and then play the adventure size for 7 mana, reanimate, and that reanimates from any graveyard, not just your graveyard. And I was like, oh, it's a staple. I play that in every deck. And then I played it in almost no decks. It's like very rare that I play that card. So I actually think that the abilities kind of like, it's fine, but I imagine there's going to be a lot of times that you get up to it, you pay 7 mana, you exile your creature, and then someone exiles your soul stone and it all goes very bad. On the other hand, if you think like a normie commander player, Charcoal Diamond's a legit staple. Like if you just look at average black commander decks, everyone's jamming their Charcoal Diamonds. And I can't believe that if you're someone who plays Charcoal Diamond in your deck, that this is not just like an incredibly huge upgrade, even if you never get to the 7 mana mode.
According to EDH Virtue. Red, 63% of mono black decks run Arcane Signet. So if you're in that, if you're in that demographic that likes Arcane, like Mana Rocks in mono black, like would you not just, is this not just way better than everything else we had previously?
It is strictly better, right, than Arcane Signet.
Well, no.
In mono black.
Yeah,
oh, okay,
in mono
black
it's
colors.
Well,
so
actually, I don't know.
Strictly
you saw the
better
Richard
because
deck
of the
one,
because of the Ugin issue. Yeah.
No. Maybe so it's untapped. It's an untapped 2-mana mana rock, which is actually very strong, right? Like, Charcoal Diamond enters tapped. But its activated ability is indestructible. Like, if you're okay with running Arcane Signet, you're okay with your mana rocks dying, essentially, right?
Yeah.
I would say this is, like, I don't know, like a 20% upgrade on Arcane Signet, which is not enough for me to play it because I think it's unplayable trash, right? But if you play Arcane Signet normally, 20% upgrade, this is crazy, right? Like,
it's also
insane, right?
What about people who wouldn't run Arcane Signet because it can be Vandal Blasted? Now it's indestructible, so I think that also grabs a huge number of more people, right?
Well, I don't know. Are you smart enough to play Ugin and All Is Dust? Right? like if you understand the importance of wrecking all the mana rocks and you understand how devastating it is, you would just play Ugin and All Is Dust, right? And therefore, you would be on the Richard train. So I feel it's like, do you recognize the importance of ramp and like not getting it destroyed? And if you do, you would not play it. You'd already be on O'Hare Axenal, right? You'd be in that camp. So you wouldn't play it. But if you don't care, if you're like, I'm going to slam down all my things, turn 5, I win, or I get blown up and I lose, this is perfect, right? Because it's more resilient, it's untapped, and it has a win con. Like a lot of these people are also the people that are like, I'm going to run 29 lands because I don't want to flood out, right? This is anti-flood protection. You know what I mean? Like, if you flood, you activate your rock. It's like Mind Stone. People play Mind Stone with the intent that if I flood out at some point, I sack it to draw a card. I don't think I've ever sacked a Mind Stone in my life, okay? I never sack it, right? So the ability is, like, fake, right? But people love it because of the anti-flood protection. Right? So this has it, and it's indestructible, and it's untapped. The only downside is it's going to cost you, like, your entire deck, right? Like, it's $50 right now. It's probably just going to go up, and if you like this one, you probably got to buy the other colors, too. So you got to get all of them, and you're fighting with the crims out there, the Marvel collectors that will just pay a premium because they like the art and the flavor of the card and not, like, what it's actually doing. So in that sense, I would say it's not worth it, right? Like, should you
what
drop $50 to put
doing
the stone
is good
in?
Though, Richard. Probably. So I like what it's doing, too.
I actually hardcore agree with that. Like, I don't think the card's bad to the extent that Richard does. But when I consider, like, your 20% better thing compared to Arcane Signet, which I don't know the exact number, whatever, we'll go that close enough. Is that worth paying an extra $49? No. No, definitely not. Like, in the scheme of, like, budget and having to make decisions based on a finite amount of resources, I don't think the upgrade that you get going from Arcane Signet to this would be worth the amount of money. I could spend that $50 and improve my deck way more in other ways than I could by upgrading an Arcane Signet to a Soulstone, I think. So I think if it actually sticks at $60, I wouldn't go out and buy it for every deck to try to upgrade all my mono black decks, because I just think it would be better off spending that money on other cards that can improve the deck. But I'm curious what you guys think. Like, if it's $50, is it worth it if you are budget conscious at all and you're a commander playing?
I don't think any card's worth $50. But like, I think like, I think it is way better than an Arcane Signet in like, I think monocolor and two color decks, just because like the main issue of Arcane Signet is like, if you are running Arcane Signet, typically speaking, like you want that mana early. Like you want to go turn two Signet, turn three, I want to have access to four mana. I want to play like a four drop or something and really get an engine going a whole turn early and everything. And then it will pay for itself very quickly. And the problem with Arcane Signet, though, is like that's the good case scenario. That's why you run those two mana rocks. But when you draw Arcane Signet on turn eight or something, then it feels really bad. Hopefully you have enough card draw that you can just ignore it in your hand. But then you have the Soul Stone, and it's good turn two, but it's also good like turn six, you know, because you could play it and the next turn you're set up to do the reanimation thingy. So I think it is a very, very good rock, but yeah. Like, I just wouldn't spend $50 on any card. Like, I don't know. Yeah. Like, you don't need them. I don't know.
I don't think it's a bad card. I just wouldn't spend $50. Mm-hmm. I don't think for it.
What would be a card you would spend? That's also a follow up afterwards.
Okay.
I mean, I have the Infinity Gauntlet, like,
pretend it doesn't. Pretend
you're me for a minute.
A special mana rock. Special mythic mana rock to sell set. Okay? would you buy it?
So when it becomes the Infinity Cashew, I will gladly. I would still buy this. I mean, $50 is a lot. I will say that. Like, that is a very expensive ask, but I will say as a card and what it's doing. It is giving me enough to where I would consider it, right? Like $50, yeah. I think I would play this in every deck, right? That has black mana in it. I focus on a card that just allows me to like play it, already gives me early use, so in the mana rock side, whereas like Virtue of Persistence, the removal is not really removal in Commander because it's -3/-3, right? It's just a 7 mana enchantment. But this is going to guarantee me a resource early. So I think that alone is solid. Like, I play, like, I don't want to talk about some of the rocks I've got on my list, but I play other rocks just because they're indestructible. And I think this is one of those things. And then you're telling me I get to reanimate stuff and isn't a build around? Yeah, I'd consider $50 for this.
To answer your question, Tomer, for me, if I'm going to spend $50 on a card and there's probably not a ton of cards I'd actually spend $50 on, but it would have to be something that had a more unique effect. Like, the reason that I'm kind of down on paying $50 for this is in my brain, I'm just like, oh, I could just play a Mind Stone or an Arcane Signet. And yeah, it's worse, but my deck's still going to function. It's not like my deck suddenly is going to fall apart, but I'm more willing to spend big money if it's like, and you're going to hate this answer, but Doubling Season or something, like some sort of unique effect that works like very well. Like, and I just have to have it to make my deck do its thing. Those are the cards that I'll be willing to like splurge on if I can make my deck do the cool thing and no other card can do that.
Really, Mr. Fancy version of the One Ring. But here's my question to you guys. If it didn't have the activated ability, the 7 mana tap, exile a creature, by the way, you need a creature for it to work. Mm-hmm. Would you still value this card highly, or you know, how many pegs down would you put it? Because I feel we're overrating it. I feel that ability was great in like 2016 Commander. I feel nowadays like you never like gas out and like you're never like activating this, and the only time you're doing this is if you're actually a reanimator deck, like you actually have like some like crazy big thing with like a huge ETB or like activated ability that kind of wins you the game or like takes back the game instantly. But most decks won't be like that. Like, just bringing back like a Solemn or something is like so scuffed, right? And I feel you're not going to spend turn 8,
is it,
right? Or whatever,
don't
turn
swing
7
into Solemns in this household.
I think,
but I feel like people are overrating this ability, and like you're gonna use it like 5% of the time, maybe 2% of the time or something, and like you're usually not gonna use it, and it's 2 mana untapped indestructible black mana rock like 95% of the time. Like,
I mean,
or do you guys think that ability is critical to making it worth $50?
Two mana indestructible untapped mana rock, I don't care if it's colored or not, I would still play that. That's already a lock, right? Hopefully, because of that, it wouldn't be $50, but I assume the $50 price tag is coming from the activated ability and the association with the soul stone.
Sure. I think if it wasn't for that ability, it wouldn't be $50 because they wouldn't have printed it mythic. And then this whole problem would solve itself and we wouldn't even have to talk about it because yeah. This card really should not be printed in mythic. Like that's that ability lets them bump it to mythic and it makes it feel mythic, I guess. And then yeah. You know, they can charge a ton of money for it and sell the set and all that kind of stuff. But I do agree with Richard that like, I think that you activate the infinity mode on it pretty infrequently. I don't think you put it in your deck with the plan being, this game I'm going to activate infinity on this. It's kind of like, I got nothing better to do. Like, whatever. Somehow I don't have any cards in hand or I flooded out and I just got all lands. I might as well do this. Or you're like a reanimation deck. And if you are a reanimation deck, then it goes up in value. If the whole idea of your deck is I'm going to have these big bombs to reanimate, then sure, like go for it. But in a generic deck, I would just play it as the 2-mana mana rock.
I think like most of the power is in its baseline just being a mana rock. But what I really like about the activated ability is, yes, it costs a lot of mana. And sometimes you'll have games where you just never activate it. But like, I think around like turn 8 to 10 is when like the game starts to end, at least in my casual tables. And it gets really dangerous to fully tap out. And yes, 8 mana is a lot. But I do like that, like, if it's, like, 8 to 10 and people are, like, jockeying for, like, lethal swings and everything, you can hold up all your mana, and that means you can hold up interaction so you don't die. And then if you don't need that mana, you can spend all that mana onto the Soulstone and start getting its effect. If it was sorcery speed, I think I would just, like, write off this card, this card's activated ability. I'd be like, sure, it's great, but at what point at, like, turn 8 and beyond am I going to spend 7 mana, fully tap out, and turn this ability on? Like, I'm not. I'm not going to do that ever. But the fact that you could do it at instant speed, hold up interaction, I think actually is quite nice.
It's great in Ink Shield deck since you're leaving up all your mana every yes. turn anyway.
And then, ironically, so, yes.
So it's instant speed, and speed. The reanimation happens during your upkeep.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. So you can't get a creature to block with or something, you know, at instant speed, right? So you if someone attacks you or something, you need to use your interaction. But if they don't, then you get to use this, and then as soon as you untap, you get your creature.
It is also nice. Since you do an instant speed, you can exile one of your creatures that's gonna die anyway, which is another like someone goes to Wrath the Board, you had your mana up, you can exile one of your creatures. So that does make it a little bit better. But anyway, okay, we gotta move on to some of the other mana rocks. Final vote. Did Richard win anyone over with his anti soul stone speech? No?
He won me over. You guys are going to be so sad when I come back to class.
I was so happy to hear it.
You guys
are
eating all his dust after farewells? Are you going to be like, ugh?
A combination of Richard's arguments and Treasure Dabber has soured me a little bit on this card. But
yeah. I also want to clarify that I'm not against oil ramp. I just feel like a couple decks, like my Edric deck, for example, does not need a single ramp source, or at least traditional ones. I'm not saying like ramp is all bad. I'm just saying like some decks might not need ramp as much as you think, especially like the 2-mana Signets and stuff. I think most decks actually don't need those Signets at all.
I don't play ramp and birds. My mild zero take. Ramp whatsoever. Yeah. But I feel those decks are the exception and far and few between. Mm. And most decks will want to increase their resources.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I view it. Anyway, okay. So we actually do like some mana rocks. There are some that we actually do like, despite all of our trashing of mana rocks over the years. So today we're going to talk about utility rocks, which we're intentionally not defining because we couldn't agree to a good definition of utility. But utility rocks and which ones we actually like and which ones we play. So let's kick things off with Tomer. Tomer, give us a utility rock that's actually good.
Okay, I want to start with one that is actually very new, and it would be a little bit weird that it's coming from me, but if I would ever stop being a basic land believer, this would be the thing that I would run in like all my decks. It's All Fates Scroll. It just came out in Edge of Eternities. 3 mana colorless artifact, taps for any color, and then you can pay 7 mana, tap it, sacrifice this artifact, draw X cards, where X is a number of differently named lanes you control. So 3 mana rock that taps for any color, not very good, you know, like it's not very good in 2025 Magic. However, if you have a lot of differently named lanes, which I know a lot of you do, not me so much, but I have like one or two decks that fulfills this role, this is basically 7 mana Cracked is at instant speed. Like, again, hold up your interaction late game. This is a whole thing for me. Hold up your interaction late game. Turn 8 or 10, you can't really afford to tap out anymore. Hold up that interaction. If you don't need to tap out to deal with the board in any given way at instant speed, you crack this. You crack this and you refill your hand instant speed. And then you get a full turn to actually use all those lanes, cards you draw. Because a lot of times if you like tap out, I draw a lot of cards. Either you have to discard down to hand size, or even if you don't, you just drew a lot of cards and you're tapped out and your opponents are being like, hey, you might as well swing into the person who drew like 10 cards. But this one you can do it at instant speed. And I really like that. I like it a lot.
This card's like a staple for me. I'm going to play this in so many. It's brand new, so I haven't got to play with it too much. But when I see this, it's like, it's Seagate Restoration on a Mana Rock. Like, that's why I'm excited about the card, is it's just like such good card draw. But I'm curious, what do you guys think? Richard, I see you laughing over there. Like, I know it's not indestructible. It's not indestructible.
For a couple of months, and I feel like I don't know any of you anymore. I'm so sad.
It draws
Seth,
cards,
you
Richard.
Would not
it draws
play
cards.
This.
It draws cards.
Let me understand. So let's say Seagate Restoration was not an MDFC. Okay, it was just like 8 mana, double your hand size. Would you play that?
No, probably not. Not in most decks. No,
instant speed.
Who cares if it doesn't matter? I'll give you anything you want. You can play anytime okay. You feel like it. It can't be countered. Whatever, right? Like, it's the fact that it's an MDFC that we play it everywhere. Yeah. Right? The fact that you can play it as an untapped land. I feel okay. We're talking about Soulstone. You're never going to activate. You're never gonna activate this thing. I thought it was a Final Fantasy town. If it reduced the activation by the number of lands you had, so you could actually like rip it for one or two, we'd be talking, right? But as the person that will actually draw like 12 off this, I would still not play it, right? Like,
really?
It's so not much mana. It's a 3-mana mana. It's not even gonna make it for you to activate. If you somehow activate it, you spent your whole turn. Draw, like, you just play Blue Sun Zenith or something at this point, right? Like, I don't know.
It's a bit, it does something until then. Blue Sun Zenith is either doing nothing or drawing you cards when you cast it. This one, you could play it, like, on turn three, and then
it's giving Krim card advantage as you run into his farewell. Krim, what do you think about this?
I play it. So, that's what I think about.
I'm adding a stat section this season. I'm going to see how many times you guys play this and how many times you guys crack this card. I don't believe any of you.
Since you've been gone, Richard, I actually had this theory that a lot of the reason our mana racks were getting blown up was because of you and your endless island inversions and farewells. So I was like, I think I'm gonna start like trying mana racks again now that Richard's not here. And I built this mana rock deck, and Krim just absolutely wrecked me. It lasted one episode, and I'm back on mana rock. So I might be overrating. I might be overrating all of these cards. Because...
Yeah, but that's such a weird situation where your deck was primarily all mana rocks, and I just had a treasure napper because I wanted to steal a rock or two to fling with the lobster.
Oh, you
that's
stole
it.
Some rocks. Yes, you did.
And it got protected. Like, yeah. There was removal. We didn't have target removal. We had a full board wipe just to get rid of that stupid goblin, but... So Krim just happened to have the protection for it. I don't know.
All right, let's keep moving on. Krim. Krim, give us a good utility mana rock.
Okay. So I have a few that I play, and some of them are just kind of trickstery cards. One of them I think I really like is Misleading Signpost. This card is just a 2 and a blue. As someone who gets punched a lot, like it's 2 and a blue. When it enters, it gets to redirect an attacker. And it taps for blue. Now, you wouldn't know this, but this card is somehow like $10. But the main thing here is like this card is sweet. I'm able to redirect attacks, and that alone has saved me a lot. Throwing off the combat math, sending the commander damage when someone's trying to spread the love, right? So that they just accidentally hit someone again, and maybe that ends that person, right? So this has saved me more often than not. Now, the question here is this a mana rock or a combat trick, you know? And, like, usually more often than not, I will try my best to hold this in my hand. And I will try to leave it theirs as a combat trick. Unless I am desperate for the mana. So, if I am desperate for the mana, I will just play this as is. But, hey, it's a flash mana rock. I'll play it after. The undo inversion or after the Ugin's, you know what I mean? So I don't know. I love this card because of that. It's more a combat trick than rock, but with the upside of making mana.
It's just so funny. I play this in my Flibblethip deck, one of my paper decks that I bring to all the Magic Cons and stuff. And I play this in my Flibblethip decks. It's fine. I don't think it's like busted or anything, but it just leads to funny moments at the every time I cast it in an actual game, it's been a fun moment at the table and people have been into it and just like liked how it impacts the game and it changes and like something crazy happens. So I like playing it just because of that. Because when it comes down to it, like those are the reasons I play Commander, those moments, like in the fun that everyone's having. And this is just, most mana rocks are honestly pretty boring, right? They make mana, maybe they do something else. This is one of the only mana rocks I can think of that actually leads to like a good time at the Commander table.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Let's, any other thoughts on that one?
Oh, wait, no. I thought it's my turn. I'm going to have to grace you. With my presence, you invited Richard. This is what you get, okay? This is. I'm gonna give you a mana rock, which I think is not trash. Well, actually, it's kind of trash, but like better than like most utility mana rocks. And that's the utility of just adding more mana. I'm gonna give you Worn Power Stone and Thran Dynamo, okay? Worn Power Stone is a 3-mana mana rock. It enters tapped, it adds 2 mana. Thran Dynamo is a 4 and it adds 3. I feel Wizards has like bamboozled you all into playing utility rocks for no reason. Like, if you're going to play a rock and understand that it's going to get blown up at some point, it might as well do what it's supposed to do very well, which is add mana. So Worn Power Stone adds 2 mana, which is probably more utility than like half of the things we're about to talk about. Like, it gives you more mana and your deck can do the thing it's supposed to do. Like, that mana can be used to cast your commander, to cast whatever support it needs, rather than, like, hypothetical, like, future value, and, like, when I flood out, this will happen. How about I just cast Worn Power Stone, cast my commander, and try to end the game, you know? Like, so I feel most of this utility stuff is overblown. You should just play Worn Power Stone if you're going to live the mana rock life and get more mana and use the cards you put in your deck to win the game with, rather than hedging with like these like random effects that need synergy and whatever. Just add more mana and be done with it.
Richard, we called the podcast the Utility Mana Rocks Podcast.
The utility of adding more mana and doing the thing your deck is supposed to do.
This is why we're not defining utility.
The chaotic definition.
How is that not utility?
I mean, those rocks are very good.
I partially agree, though.
I don't know if I agree. I consider them utility rocks, but they make a lot of mana and they're very powerful. So I think these are some of the better mana rocks because of that. Especially if you can get away with lots of colorless
mana. Why wait till turn 8 to draw cards when you could just have double the mana for the next like 5 turns? You know what I mean?
It is just colorless mana. So some decks you need the fixing. So that is like a bit of a drawback there. Some decks are gonna not want that. But yeah, I think you're right. Just Thran Dynamo making 3 mana is kind of absurd.
I think it depends on when you want that mana too. Like Thran Dynamo, if I have like an 8-drop commander or something like that, or if I just have like a lot of high cost spells, or I have ways of untapping the Thran Dynamo. Like I run this in Arcanist, for example, because my Arcanist deck is all about untapping permanents. So the bigger mana rocks that I can untap, the more mana I can generate off these untappers. So I really, really like it there. Obviously, if I'm like running, I don't know, like a Kozilek deck or something like that, this is like the premium, the best mana rock to run. But I don't know, sometimes my deck wants to just like play a mana rock on turn 2 and then cast a 4-drop on turn 3. It all depends, but I think it is very, very, it's incredibly strong.
I have a
question
for you, Tomer. Do you segregate utility rocks and like non-utility rocks in your deck building, or are they all fighting for like the same slot?
That's a good question. Mm-hmm. It's funny because like I don't really use a checklist anymore for my rocks and everything. It's just like what are the best cards available to this deck, and I try to just add those. So I don't really have slots anymore, I don't think. I guess I do because I have like removal. Like I need to have a minimum of X amount of removal and stuff. But mana rocks is an interesting one. I just try to jam as much ramp or mana advantage as I possibly can in a deck, and I don't really differentiate between utility and just raw mana.
I don't differentiate between utility and raw mana, although I definitely differentiate between like expensive late game mana rocks and like early game turn 2 mana rocks. Like something like Coveted Jewel or Great Henge or what's the Eldritch? Throne of Eldraine. Like something like that that's like 5 mana, 6 mana. A lot different than a Mind Stone or a Soul Stone, something that's coming down on 2 mana. But as far as utility versus non-utility, yeah, it's all the same to me.
Yeah, right, definitely that's the only thing I do. I separate it by where the rocks go on the curve. right? Like that, there's a point where, like, if it's four or five mana, I stop counting it as a rock. Like Relic of Sauron is just like a draw piece, or like Throne of Eldraine, like you had mentioned. So
I got a good one for you guys. This one, Phil's not here today, but Phil lives on in Machine God's Effigy, which this is a card that I've started to play a ton because of Phil, because Phil plays it in every deck he can, and it always looks so insane when he plays it. I'm like, I'm going to start putting this in my decks. So it's a 4-mana mana rock, but when it enters as a copy of any creature on the battlefield, except it's an artifact that taps and makes blue mana and is not a creature. So this is essentially a mana rock that lets you steal the abilities of any creature on the battlefield. This can be Enter's abilities, so you can get a Moldrifter and draw some cards. It can also be static abilities, and we've seen some wild games where this copies some static ability on a Kemball or something, and you just like absolutely pop off and it goes super wild. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so wild. So I think this card's actually really good. It is on the expensive side of rocks at 4 mana, so it's not going to do the ramp 2 into 4 or whatever on turn 3, but still, it's just so much value, and it's a pretty unique effect. Like, being able to have this creature's ability on a non-creature permanent is not like unheard of, but it's something that's pretty rare in Magic. So I love this card, but I'm curious, do you guys, Richard, you play this one, right? No? You can justify it.
I'm going to get like a judge clone to go to Phil's house and watch him play the Commander Clash next, because I too have been bamboozled. I see Phil popping off so hard with Machine God's Effigy, Fairy Artisan, Amadeus Augury. Every time I play them in my deck, they do absolutely nothing and I regret it tremendously. And this happened at least like 4 or 5 times. Wow. I'm like, how bad can variants be, guys? Right? But it like does nothing for me all the time. I don't understand. And maybe it's because I don't pack my deck with enough value. Like, I don't have enough targets in my own deck to copy with Effigy that, you know, makes it work. I don't know, but I can never get this card to work. I tried it for the longest time. I'm off this train, but Phil having success with it all the time. And
running like 12 board wipes and everything, maybe there's just no creatures left to copy with this
well,
card.
Before you board wipe, you Machine God's Effigy, then you board wipe.
Right? True, like,
true. Not an artifact, but true. I can't get it to work. I don't know what Phil does.
Do you play this one, Krim?
I only play it in specifically my, like, any kind of artifact deck or something. I play it with, like, my Iron Man cards and stuff like that, right? But other than that, I still think it's 4 mana. It's a lot. I'd rather just play another artifact that I want. And so, like, yeah, this card is a bit clunky, but it's cute. It does some fun things, and in the right deck, I'd like it. But, yeah, I'm nowhere near as high as Phil is on it.
This one?
So,
go ahead, Tomer.
I just want to say, I saw Phil just pop off of this so hard so many times. And then I put it in my Tetsun deck for half a year, and then I never drew it in my Tetsun deck. And then I was like, well, there's other cards I want to try out. So I took it out, and it's sitting like, it's like, you know, it's in the deck box, right? It's in the deck box sitting with the tokens. And I want to put it back in, but like, yeah, I just never drew it. I played it like 8 games, and I just never saw it. But it's so good when Phil plays it, right?
I know. It looks so good when Phil plays it.
I know it's wrong. I wasn't playing old bordered foil. I wasn't playing old bordered foil.
That's the secret. That's the secret. All right, let's go back to the top of the order. Telmer, hit us up with the utility rock.
Okay. So Krim is going to talk about one that I legit, it's the one that I play all the time. But there's one that I play in one deck, and I think it's like, this is probably the most underrated mana rock, because I looked at EDH Rec and like nobody runs this freaking card, but I swear to you, it plays so much better than it looks. It is called File of Galadriel. File of Galadriel, 3-mana colorless legendary artifact. If you would draw a card while you have no cards in hand, draw 2 cards instead. If you would gain life while you have 5 or less life, you gain twice that much life instead. And it could tap it. Add 1 mana of any color. Now, this card, I swear to you, is like in the top 3 best cards in my mono red Inti deck, which is all about cycling, discarding, because whenever I'm discarding, I get to impulse draw off Inti. So the entire deck is it's incredibly low to the ground, the mana values is just like all one drops, two drops, three drops, because I want to be able to cast all the things that I'm impulse drawing off of them. And it works. So I'm usually like low. So I usually play like file. I usually dump out my hand and then I have like one card in hand. Oops, nope. I drew an extra card off file of Galadriel. Then I like discard to impulse draw, cast those things off impulse. Whenever I'm like looting and stuff, I draw an extra card. Basically, like imagine this. Imagine a 3-mana rock that draws you two cards. Just draws you. Wouldn't that be like without you paying any mana or anything? You're not activating it. You're not sacrificing it or anything like that. You're not paying an additional. Isn't that not like absurdly broken? And then like it's not just like Inti, like there's a lot of like red commanders that are like Clive, for example. Excellent example. Clive, when it enters the battlefield, you discard your hand, then you draw that many cards. If you have file out, you draw an extra one. And if you do that like a couple times, like once or twice in the game, and you drew two cards, it's like a divination that is also just like making you mana. And I also run it in Selenia because I go super low in life and then I just do a life swap ability. This doubles the life I gain off it. It's so good. It's so, I swear to you, this is like, nobody plays this card. Everybody thinks I'm crazy. If you draw like two cards off it, just passively, is this not just like the most broken mana rock in existence?
But I feel like that's going to happen some really low percentage of the time. Like, I feel like 98% of the time, it's going to be just a 3-mana. It's going to be a mana lith. And then, like, 2% of the time, you draw two cards and feel really hyped about it. Like, I'm sure you could construct a deck where this was going to be good, but I feel like in a huge percentage of decks, it's just stone unplayable.
Yeah, like, I could see why it's good in your Inti deck, right? You're throwing away tons of cards and whatnot, and you're impulse drawing, so you're not fully refilling your hand, right? And you're speeding your way to the bottom to zero, right? But then
and then big scores are so, like, insane. Like, you just big score, you discard your last card, you draw three cards instead of two. It's like, it's too good!
But draw two cards with this, my game has went horribly wrong. If I am ever to the point where this does something, my whole game has went off the rails.
At least if you would have led with like, finally I found a purpose for my one with nothing, then like, sure. Like then,
what about
then,
like Tanuk, you warp out your entire hand, right? You just like blah 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 blah, and then whenever you're like, you're drawing more cards off afterwards, you're drawing extra cards. It adds up, I swear.
You know what? In Tanuk and in Inti, because those two help you empty your hands while still giving you like card advantage in some way, like it's fine. But
five?
I don't know if I like this in like any deck that isn't that, right? Like at all. Like this is, I would play Darksteel Ingot, right? Like I would just play an indestructible rock over this.
This sucks, right, Richard?
Yeah, this sucks.
I mean, Tomer's right, okay? In the like three decks that can utilize it, which are decks that go empty in hand, right? So like any kind of like, probably like Madness deck, Discard decks, Hellbent decks, Inti, stuff like that. This is insane. But I think there's like literally five decks or something in all of Magic that would like utilize this ability. And for every other deck, this is like hot trash, right? So if you are building a discard your hand deck, right? Or, you know, a deck that does something like that and you're often on zero cards, this is cracked. I don't buy the life gain thing though. Like even if you're like kind of like life
sovereignty
is a little sus, but yeah, in those five decks, sure, go wild with this. But for everyone else, this is like, you know, whatever, right? Like I would never run this. It would do kind of nothing. But keep it in mind, right? Like that one time when they release a new commander that requires you to have no cards in hand, here it is, right? Here's the sauce. But I don't even know if it's the sauce, right? It has to be the impulse draw, right? Because once you draw two cards and your hand is not empty again, you can't use it again. Right? So you gotta have a way to continually empty your hand as well, right? So
like Clive, for example, you have to discard your entire hand, then
so
you draw cards
though,
equal to your devotion.
You draw four and you're not gonna be able to use this again for a long time, right?
You blink Clive and
so. I think Inti is the good one.
Does Clive need plus one card draw though, Tomer? Like, aren't you usually drawing a new hand with Clive anyway? So,
but he needs ramp.
Instead of seven,
mana.
That's true. But it doesn't even have red mana symbols for devotion.
But it helps you get Clive out.
All right. Let us know in the comments if you have any decks that can play Fail of Galadriel. Krim
play and should play are very separate.
Yes, that is. Krim, hit us up with a utility rock.
I love this utility rock. It's a red one. It's two and a red. It's Cursed Mirror. Tap to add a red, but when it enters, you may have it become a copy of any creature on the battlefield until end of turn, except it has haste. I use this in my Goro Goro and Satoru deck. This card has just been sweet in any kind of aggressive deck. Also, this card I've seen go combo off with so many things because it becomes a copy of something, and then the constant looping of this could just lead to, I don't know, this card just has so many applications, and at its absolute floor, it taps to add a red, and you get to like steal something and then just hit somebody for some lethal damage, maybe, or I don't know, steal a creature for one swing. So not steal, but you get to have it be a copy of a creature. So I don't know, I love this card. I think this is an absolute house. If it hadn't been reprinted a million times, I think this would be like 15-20 bucks.
This is my favorite mana rock of all time. Ooh. And end of story.
Wow.
Every single time I've seen it in my hand, it's always been great. Like, there's always going to be something, some creature on the battlefield with like an attack trigger, an enter the battlefield trigger, something that is just good, or just really big. You know, you just get a big creature, you draw this late game, and it's like, okay, there's a 8/8 on the battlefield or whatever. I'm going to copy it. I'm going to smack you for 8 because I don't need the mana right now. It's like, yeah. It's so good. And yes, it does combo with like Astral Dragon and stuff, but like, it's always good. It's always good.
It does a lot of what Machine God's Effigy does, but it does it like cheaper, and it gives you some damage. You lose the upside of having like a static that sits out for a bunch of turns. So that's like, that's the big difference. But yeah, I also really like this card. It's one of my favorite red mana rocks for sure. Richard, do you play this one?
All the time. This is actually, I think, the best mana rock one, period.
We found one.
Right?
Then we got there?
Well, because at ETBs, you can copy a Solemn, you get your ramp, you can yes, you can copy like a student companion.
You can turn it into
real Wild Galadriel, Tomer, right? Yes. You can draw two.
Yes,
and unlike all of these theoretical, like, all fate scroll late game win cons, it's actually late game win con, right? Because for 3 mana, you play it, you copy a bomb, get its ETB, and attack, right? And it doesn't cost you your entire turn. It doesn't, like, it's not super telegraphed. No one knows you have it. You can also blink this thing. You can reanimate it. It's an artifact to turn on your artifact synergies. So I actually think this is one of the very few mana rocks where you can play it, have it get blown up, and it's fine because it does like actually so much, right? And like just copying Solemn is insane. Like that's it, right? It's like it's a double ramp, right? And you don't care anymore, right? And you can copy so many crazy commanders and so many like crazy ETBs. Copy a Primordial with this thing on the way in, like, right? Like it does so much. Yeah. This is the true one mana rock that should be at the top, right?
It's so good. I even if you have like a legendary command, if you have a commander that has a very powerful ETB and that's what you're running it for, it's still worth it late game to just cast Cursed Mirror, let it die to the legend rule just so you can use the ETB again, because at that point it's just like a twin flame on your commander. So like, again, Clive is another one. I love Clive. But like, it's like, imagine just like a refill, just like 3 mana, refill your hand.
It's very good. Very good for sure. Well, Richard, we found a mana rock you liked. Is there still another mana rock you like? Because it's your turn.
There's only two, and we're going to get to this.
I was afraid we've run out of Richard rocks. Yeah,
Dark Richard.
you're not even going to count it as a mana rock. It's coveted.
Mana Geyser.
Six mana artifacts.
When it enters, you draw 3 cards, tap it to add 3 mana of any one color. Whenever one or more creatures an opponent controls attacks you and aren't blocked, that player draws 3 cards, gain controls of this artifact. Untap it. Now, people are like, I play it if I have blink synergies or something. You know, make sure that your opponent can't steal it or you get it back. I played in literally every deck and I just throw it in there and it's a 6 mana, draw 3, add 3 mana back, right? So it's a 3 mana, draw 3, and then maybe you guys can take it. And so far, it's never really bit me in the butt and it adds so much fun to the table. It's like adding Monarch to the table. Now everyone is super interested in combat. Things happen. You can get people. It doesn't have to deal damage. It just has to be unblocked. And I go as far as playing stuff like Blink Moth Nexus just to have a creature land to take my coveted jewel back. Like, that's how, like, it's just my own coveted jewel, right? I'm like, I'm going to take it back after the wrath, draw another 3, 6, you know, drawing 6 off my own coveted jewel is insane. And then if you have blink shenanigans, it like goes turbo, right? Like it's actually just like one of the best cards in your deck. You can keep blinking it, adding mana, drawing cards. But I play it everywhere. It's 6 mana. It's expensive, but good thing you played Resilient Ramp all the way up here. So even after the wipes, you can play a 6 mana rock and do the thing. So I really like
an indestructible rock.
It's free. Like it's 50 cents.
This might be my favorite card in Commander. It's very close. It's like in the top 10 of just like when I sit down to play Commander, cards that I hope will show up at the table. Coveted Jewel is very high on that list because it just has like such a fun effect on the game. Like exactly what Richard said, where it keeps the game moving, everyone's drawing cards, everyone's having a good time. And it's pretty powerful, too. Like, if you want to be mean with it and you do the sacrifice stuff, it's actually kind of busted. There's, like, it's really, really strong card. But even just playing it fairly, it's just so much fun. So I jam this card in a lot of decks, too, even if it's not really good, just because it's going to be a good time.
Yeah. This card's a blast, right? Like, I've started to love this card just so much because of that. It's such a fun time, and it does feel bad when you aren't able to take it back, though, or when you aren't able to take the jewel either. So, yeah, but it's kind of nice, and the one thing that everybody forgets is that they get to steal it and then untap it and then use it again right then and there. So it's a nice little game of blitzball almost, it feels like sometimes. But yeah, this one's sweet.
All right, so. Last card, and I was going to go with Thought Vessel here, because Thought Vessel is the mana rock I personally play the most. There's also a 3-mana version of it, which is Decanter of Endless Water, but these are just mana rocks that make a colorless mana and give you no max hand size. I really value no max hand size, so I play this in a lot of decks, even if I don't play any other mana rocks, just as like another Reliquary Tower, but I feel like that's kind of a boring card to go out with. Instead, I want to ask you guys about a card that I've actually been cutting from some of my decks, but I've seen on a lot of your lists, and I used to play this card a ton, and I want to hear what people think about it. And that card is Midnight Clock. So Midnight Clock, it's a 3-mana blue mana rock. It makes a blue. You can pay 3 mana to put an hour counter on it. At the beginning of your upkeep, you put an hour counter on it. And then when the 12th hour counter is put on the artifact, you shuffle your hand in your graveyard into your library, draw 7 cards, and then exile it. So you're probably thinking, Seth, don't you love to draw cards? Why are you cutting Midnight Clock from your deck? And here's been my experience with this card. I GM this in pretty much all my blue decks. It was in my Flibble Flip deck that I play a lot at Magic Cons and stuff. And I kept running into issues where this was actually hurting me more than it was helping me, where I'd have a handful of like 7 cards, or maybe I'd have no max hand size and I've had like 10 cards. And this would, at a very inopportune time, force me to wheel away my hand and draw a new hand. Or maybe I'm holding onto some counter spells to protect my win con when I'm gonna go, you know, reese out my commander and try to win the game. And then all of a sudden, the clock strikes midnight and there goes your hand and you got a bunch of lands in hand now. So I'm actually very much off the Midnight Clock train, unless you have a specific plan for it just as like a value card, because I just found the wheel was hitting me at really awkward times. But I'm curious, I know it was on Phil's list, I see it on Krim's list, I used to play it a ton. What do you guys think of Midnight Clock, and am I off base with my experience with it?
This card is gas, dude. This card is so gas. I mean, okay, if I'm like, you know, Drago, I could see why I wouldn't want this, yeah. Right? Because Drago, I'm sculpting the perfect hand to protect myself, and then I shuffle it away. So if you're doing that, I strongly advise against it. But if you're a blue deck that is going to deploy a bunch of things, it's a nice refill. It randomly could prevent you from getting milled. It's got a lot of utility in that, and you can control the clock itself as well, in that like you could speed it up, right? And sometimes I like speeding this thing up because it doesn't require you to tap it to add the counter. You just pay 3 and you just get there. So this is nice in the late game when I'm flooded and I can just try to get myself a full grip without refilling everyone else's hand as well. Shuffling my graveyard back in is very relevant. There's a lot of spells I like to get back, and this time with less lands in the deck, right? So this is just a sweet rock that can just do that for me. So I love this rock.
Richard, Tomer?
No.
You don't play it?
I don't remember the last time I even considered playing it.
Really?
Yeah, I have the same issue of just like, maybe if I was a very proactive deck and I'm not trying to like keep any cards in my hand, then I could see myself just like jamming this. But
if you it's play like blue file, you could draw 8 cards.
Yeah. Yeah, you got him, Tomer. No, combo.
No,
combo.
Come on.
We got a combo.
This is better than Vile, Tomer.
No, no, it's not. Get out of here. No.
Where are you at with this, Richard?
This is why I'm so convinced that Seth will never play the Soulstone, because we are the same, Seth. I was off Midnight Clock like 3-4 years ago. There was a point in time where it was in every single blue deck, and we're 2025 Magic, man. I have like more than 7 cards in hand going into the mid game. I do not want my Mana Rock going away and taking the hand that I've sculpted all game with it. Right? Yep. So we are past the age of like scraping for cards. So I never play this, and there are two reasons why you should play. Well, one reason is you play a wheel deck, right? Like you play, I think Tomer played Heliod or something, right? Yeah, you're going to wheel, you know, you're going to destroy everyone when you wheel, like, sure, like go for it. But especially in the age of like Bowmasters and Shouldreds and like things that when people see Telegraph draw, you're like, oh, you're going to get so punished by this. So I don't like this. I mean, if I had synergy, like a wheel deck, I would play it. But other than that, I would just play like literally anything else before this. Like, I don't value this card draw because we have so many cards in hand now. It's not a problem.
If it was a May, I would probably play it. If it was a May ability and it was like, you could, when it hits 12, like exile it and get a new hand or keep it around, then I would probably play it. But yeah, as it is, just too risky. Too risky for me. So-
It wouldn't be thematic if it was like,
yeah,
May. It's like when it strikes 12. That's the whole point.
Yeah, yeah. So then you lose your hand. You turn back into a pumpkin.
Yes.
Anyway, those are the best utility mana rocks and also the Soul Stone. So you've heard our takes. Let us know what you think in the comments. How good is the Soul Stone? Do you have a favorite utility mana rock? Let us know, and we'll be back next week to talk some more Commander. So until then, have an amazing week, everyone. And this is a crew signing out.